This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, Chinese blogger, and is afraid of Count Chocula. My co-host is John Pasden, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and once took a test to see if he had a kidney stone. And he passed it. In this episode, John and I talk about everything you wanted to know about extensive reading, but were afraid to ask. After this, you'll be able to identify why many of the traditional methods of learning a language are not as effective and how extensive reading solves all of those. If you want to accelerate your path to Chinese fluency, this episode is for you. Guest interview is with Mariano Mele from Argentina. He has spent the last 8 years learning Chinese, a path that started when he decided to ask a girl out on a date. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, I'm Jared Turner.
Hey, I'm John Pasden. I am still in Shanghai.
And I'm coming at you live from Utah in the United States. Okay, John, I have some sad news. We don't have any new reviews to read.
Oh, man.
I know if you have something to say about the show, well, hey, go online, leave us a review. We'd love to hear what you have to say. But that's okay, because today we have a great topic, John.
This is the topic Jared has been dying to talk about at length.
It is a topic I was born to speak about, baby. Today we are talking about extensive reading. Now, we've talked about this on our podcast here and there, snippets and everything, but this is the ultimate extensive reading podcast. We're going to tell you what you need to know about extensive reading and why it is so good. First, we're going to talk about the importance of repetitive exposure to these word pairs. Then we're going to talk about why learning grammar really shouldn't be your priority. There's a lot better ways to learn grammar by actually studying it. Then we're going to touch on the importance of like seeing the frequency of words in context. And then finally, we're going to hit on why typically like learning in a classroom experience from a textbook is not going to be sufficient to really help you be proficient in the language, but it's going to need a lot more. But I'm first going to start out with my story because I've never really told my full story. So I've been in China for about 2 years. I've been studying Chinese on my own. And after about 2 years, I wasn't a very studious student. And my Chinese was very like kind of broken words and phrases. I still kind of lived in this mostly English environment. And then I learned about extensive reading. I said, hey, if this is as good as it says it is, it should help me learn my Chinese. So I found a series of graded readers in Chinese. I read 10 books in 3 months, and my Chinese went from like broken to conversational, like in that 3 month period. And my coworkers were like, Jared, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just reading books.
What level were you starting with?
I was reading a 300 character level. So it's kind of like equivalent to our level one. It went so fast. Like I was just reading on the metro to and from work every day, and that was it. And all of a sudden, just Chinese just started to click. I started to be able to like speak way better. I'd be able to actually understand what people were saying. And I was like conversational. And that created like this solid base from there when my Chinese just went up, up and up. So extensive reading was like a huge milestone and it made me have those serious breakthroughs in learning Chinese.
All right. Well, Jared, how about if I tell my story? Because I did not use extensive reading at all to get to the advanced level. And I really wish I had.
Actually, John, that's a really good point. What was it like for you going the hard way?
Okay, so for my first 2 years of Chinese study, I was in the U.S. I used a textbook, Integrated Chinese, second edition. I think the textbook was okay, but my knowledge of Chinese was very shaky. My pronunciation was terrible, not just tones, but, you know, X, Q, J, R, lots of problems. So I had a very fundamental understanding of Chinese, and I thought I was okay, but I followed those 2 years of formal study, in which I did very well, by the way. I got A's in all my classes. I followed those 2 years by just going straight to China. So when I arrived in China in Hangzhou in 2000, I felt okay. Like, yeah, I can communicate. I had already done something similar with Japanese. So I was kind of confident. But my confidence got destroyed when I arrived in China because no one could understand me. So what followed was just a lot of painful, like trying really hard to practice Chinese with people and failing often, looking stuff up a lot in my dictionary, just studying a lot on my own, not a lot of reading. One thing that I found helped me was at the time, the popular chat program was QQ.
Oh yeah, QQ.
And if I went on QQ, people couldn't tell that I was a foreigner right away. And so I kind of made a game out of seeing how long I could trick them into thinking I was just a Chinese person. And so I did get a bit of comprehensible as well as incomprehensible input that way through the chat practice. But for the most part, it was just a lot of very scattered and fragmented Chinese practice. Later on, I've kind of made up for all that input I didn't have when I started a job and I was translating news stories. When I first started doing that job, I was not good enough to translate the articles on my own. I had to have a Chinese person helping me. And so that job gave me tons of input. And I have to admit, in the beginning, it wasn't super comprehensible. It was a lot of work. It's what we call intensive reading, trying to understand what those news articles were saying. So I put in the work, I put in the time. And eventually I got to the point where those news articles became comprehensible. Like I got up to 98%. And looking back on it now, I didn't have anything comprehensible or only very tiny chunks in QQ chat at a lower level. And when I got to a higher level, it was still super hard. And it took quite a long time and quite a lot of input to get to the point where I started to feel kind of comfortable reading Chinese. And it came so late in my Chinese studies. It was painful. Like I made it, but it was painful.
John, for every one of you, there's probably, you know, 50 people that dropped out.
Yeah, not only that, but also if I didn't have to do that translation job to make money, there's no way I would have voluntarily done it. I needed the money. I had to do it. And the other thing is I was in China and I had all this Chinese around me and all these resources, which also made it easier, but it was still really hard.
All right. So we're going to talk about it real quick. What is extensive reading? John, to kick us off on this, maybe you could tell us from your linguistic expertise on Krashen's input hypothesis.
Okay, so the main idea is that learners need lots of comprehensible input in order to improve their language skills. Comprehensible meaning they can understand it. So there's this famous little formula, I plus one. I is the input, and the plus one means slightly harder than everything they totally already know. So it's still comprehensible because there's enough context and enough known words and grammar, but then you add just a little bit to push their brain to try to understand these new words and structures. And because it's couched in all that context and known material, the I plus one means you can continue to improve provided you get enough input. So that's the input hypothesis.
That's right. And the great thing is that extensive reading has taken that hypothesis and figured out, like, where do we learn best at? Because there's always that debate in the language learning community saying, like, okay, that plus one, how much extra is like suitable or is like the best for us to learn? It's best when we can comprehend 98% of what we're reading or what we're listening. And a lot of guys, you might think like, oh, that sounds like, you know, super high. Like I should be able to learn good when I'm at 90%. No. So if you are listening or reading at a 90% comprehension level, that's 1 in 10 words you don't know. John, I mean, what's that like when you only can understand 90% what's going on?
It's frustrating because you can understand a lot, but a lot of times that 10% has some really important material. So it's like, you know that they're talking about this important thing, but you don't know what that thing is. So it's kind of painful at 90%.
But if you're reading at the 98% level, I mean, that's like 1 in 40, maybe 1 in 50, you don't know. So it's a lot easier to pick up what those meanings are. Okay, but what I'm first going to talk about with you guys here, and John and I, we're going to address this, is like, why is this important? Okay, like, what do you actually need to know to like master the language, and why is maybe traditional education in many ways insufficient to help you really achieve that fluency? So here's some numbers now to throw at you guys. So like, what do you actually need to know to be like fluent in the language? You need to know like 8,000 to 9,000 words to be like fluent, like near native fluency in a language. And that's to be able to like understand like 98 or being close to 100% of things that you're reading and you're hearing everywhere. Advanced learners, there is so much that you actually need to know. And there's some insidious things about language that we don't really think about. Okay, because there's grammar and all that stuff. But one of ones is always a good example is collocations. That's a linguistics term, but really can call it like word pairs. And these are like phrases and words that commonly go together. So for example, like, you know, you would say in English, we'd say blonde hair, but you don't really say yellow hair. Or you say a big surprise, but not a large surprise. But Chinese has like similar things. Like, John, can you give any examples of collocations in Chinese?
if you're talking about food, in English, you'd be like, oh, it's really good, right? But if you just use 好 in Chinese, that's kind of weird. You want to use 好吃, right? Whereas in English, you wouldn't be like, this food is delicious. This is delicious and that is delicious. Like, you overuse the word delicious and it seems like there's something wrong with you.
And there's all these little things in the language that you don't really think about, but you can't just study it in a textbook. This only comes with like exposure to the language.
I mean, you could study it in a book, but you know, that's really not efficient and it's also boring.
Because they only make sense in context. You can't just study it like on a flashcard and, oh, now I know how to use it. And then grammar. I mean, holy cow. I mean, people say, oh, Chinese doesn't have any grammar. Well, I mean, it does. but grammar, it's just patterns. And this is one of the reasons why studying grammar is not very effective. If you listen to our podcast when we had Steve Kaufman on the show, that kind of famous polyglot, he speaks like 20 languages. He's like, I never study grammar. I mean, think about it. Like when you're actually trying to speak or trying to write, you're trying to think, oh, how do I apply this rule while you're trying to speak? It doesn't really work very well. You've got to actually just kind of have that pattern, like, you know, in your brain, in your mind, and it just kind of comes out.
Yeah, I find that grammar is really good for scratching an itch. Like if you're not itchy, you don't have to scratch, right? But if the way you use a word, why the words are in this order, if it's starting to bother you, then it can be useful to look at a grammar explanation. Scratch that itch if you need to, but if you're not itchy, don't scratch, right?
So we've talked about this grammar, word pairs, but a lot of times people underestimate like how many times you actually have to see a word before you really like learn it. And the research shows that you need usually 20 to 50 encounters with a word before it's truly learned.
Yeah, I think a lot of learners, they think that if they studied it a couple times and they got an A on the test that had that word, that they learned it. But guess what? That word might not be there to stay. And living in China, you know, where I have the Chinese environment around me, I've encountered this myself organically, where I'll encounter a word, I don't know it, I won't ever use the word because it's still hard for me and kind of unfamiliar. But as time goes on, if I keep hearing it one day, and I kind of surprise myself, you know, I hit that threshold of having known exactly how the word works, what kind of situations you use it, what are the words it collocates with, and bam, it just comes out.
And that's why you always hear people say, you got to get out there and talk. You got to talk to native speakers. You just got to be practicing because you got to encounter these words and see them in so many different settings. So this reads like that common thing of, you know, I've been studying Chinese for years and why can't I, you know, speak? Why can't I read anything? Or why can I have a conversation? It's just really hard. And the reason is because a lot of times when you are studying it in a classroom, the language learning is abstract and it's very easy to forget. And you work on like learning just the pieces of language by, you know, flashcards or just sample sentences or just short dialogues, but you don't get enough comprehensible and meaningful input. Not just that comprehensible, it's meaningful. It's something that connects with you, something that means something to you that you can actually engage with. And so you just won't get to that level of being able to speak until you feel comfortable using what you know. And that's not going to happen until you've met enough words and grammar to you feel comfortable using it.
Let me interrupt for a second here. So what does meaningful mean, though? I think some people might be like, oh, yeah, meaningful. It's something I want to learn. But that's not really what we mean by meaningful. Like if you're in China and you need to go buy some batteries, but you need to make sure you buy the right size, well, then you have to study that material so that you can then go and use it. And then when they respond to you, that input you're getting, you know, based on what you asked for or based on a question you asked, that input is super meaningful because if you don't interpret it right, you're not going to get what you want. In the context of learning, if you just have to read this dialogue in the textbook to pass the test, that's not super meaningful. Sure, you want a good grade. But if you're reading a book because you really like the book and you really want to know what happens in the story, well, that's another kind of very meaningful personally.
So you got to have all of these things to develop that sense of the language. So this underscores one of the challenges of your traditional language education. It's just based on a textbook. A lot of the programs, they do not systematically recycle the grammar or the words enough time. So you don't get that exposure to it.
But here we should also give the teachers a little bit of credit because they know that you need lots of input and lots of repeating. But you know, if there's 30 students in a class, how do you do that? Plus, you have this textbook and they have to cover the material for the test. it's hard for the teachers because they want it to be interesting and meaningful for the students, but they have to do their job. The good news is if you're an adult and you're learning Chinese because you want to learn Chinese, then you are now in charge of your own studies, so you can do this right.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's, and again, this doesn't mean that like textbooks are bad. Textbooks are helpful. Curriculums are helpful. But what we need to do, if you really want to get the benefits, is that you need to get enough, a massive exposure of the things that you're learning and you're studying so it starts to all come together and solidify in your brain. So this comes back to extensive reading. And so I'm going to hammer this home here. So, okay, we talked earlier, John, you know, like about reading at a low level of comprehension. So in extensive reading, they kind of can break this into three different kind of levels. When you're reading below 90% comprehension, we call that reading pain. It's like slow, it's hard. Many people have done this. In fact, think about that time where you got a book, oh, I'm going to try to read this whole page in this, you know, book by, it's a translation of, well, some popular novel. And you spend like a half an hour going through like a couple paragraphs and you got all these notes in the margin. And by the time you got through the paragraph, you're not even sure what you read.
Yeah. In my own experience learning Chinese, like the translation stuff, I knew what I was reading, but it was still definitely a form of reading pain. It was below 90% comprehension.
Now we're reading between 90 and 98% comprehension. This is called intensive reading. This is like, you know, reading those articles in your textbooks. Usually at this level, you're going to read slow. You still need to stop. You're going to have a dictionary. But this reading level, it is helpful. We can learn at this level. And it's better if it's kind of a little bit like a guided reading. Maybe you have someone there who has a higher level of Chinese than you. And most effective way for learning is at a 98% comprehension level. So that's like 1 in 40, 1 in 50 characters that are unknown. You're reading more of a natural pace. You're starting to build reading speed. Your brain starts to automatically process the language. And this is an exciting thing, automatic processing. I love this stage when I was doing extensive reading for myself, because think about this. You're reading Chinese and you're translating in your head. Someone speaks to you in Chinese and you translate in your head into your native language. And then you think in your native language and you translate into Chinese and you speak back. And that's slow. It's a really slow process. One of the things I always harp on the importance of reading speed is because you get to a point where you can read fast enough where you don't have time to translate in your head. And you start to comprehend and understand things in Chinese. And this is called automatic processing. You just have the idea and you just open your mouth and the words come out.
Right. And it's not an all or nothing thing. It's not like I used to translate and now I don't translate anymore. You'll get to a stage where you can read simple stuff and automatically process it. But as soon as the sentences get to be a certain length, or you start to creep out of your comfort zone with the vocabulary, then you can't do it anymore. Got to keep pushing that bar up so that you can automatically process more and more. And once it gets high enough, that's when you can bring in the materials that are actually fun and interesting to read. And that bar has never been as low as it is today.
That's right, because what we have are graded readers. That's what we do at Mandarin Companion. We produce graded readers. And graded readers are excellent because they're storybooks typically that are leveled. You know, our breakthrough level is like the lowest level, and it's only written using 150 basic characters. So people who've been studying Chinese for like a year or maybe less or more should be able to actually pick up one of these books and start reading it. And it is a huge boost to your fluency. Like, it starts putting all the language together. So graded readers are super helpful. Really, guys, if you want to get into extensive reading, you got to read a lot. And frankly, I mean, obviously we're promoting our books, right? Mandarin Companion, but you need more than our books. You need to get your hands on like all the graded readers that you can. And there are other series out there too. So when people ask me, should I read your series or Chinese Breeze? I say like, yes, you know, do Mandarin Companion and Chinese Breeze. Do them all.
And we are making more books, people, but it's going to be a while before we have all the books that you need to just keep leveling up without reading anything else.
That's right. So here's one good thought experiment. Some people say, well, oh, you know, I'm reading, you know, at a 90% comprehension level. So there's like 10% I don't know. So I'm learning all these characters, right?
Well, the problem is you're going to be learning all these new words, but they're not going to stick. So you're going to have to spend a lot of time reviewing them. And then you're getting new ones and you have to keep going back and reviewing the old ones. And none of it's really sticking. You're like, you know, juggling 20 plates. At the very best, you get kind of a passive knowledge of these words, like you'll remember them when you see them, but you're not going to have enough exposure and enough fluency to be able to use them or to really make those words your own. To do that, you're going to have to go at a bit slower pace, take on fewer words, but really master those words.
So the bottom line is that graded readers are like essential. And I've talked to some people like, oh yeah, you know, I read like one chapter a week. No. We're talking like, you know, try to get through like a book a week or maybe two books a week. Spend that time really buckling down and getting reading. Because the more that you see those language in context, you see the words, you see the grammar patterns, the quicker you're going to acquire it. And it's going to start sticking in your head. And you're going to be able to start really using Chinese at a much higher level of proficiency. And for all those guys who are out there saying, oh, I've been studying Chinese for, you know, like 5 years or 10 years. I say, well, can you read? And like, oh, I can read the newspaper. I'm like, great. What's your reading speed? And, you know, it's been interesting. Sometimes I've met people who can read, you know, they know like 2,500 characters and a lot of characters, a lot of words, but their reading speed is very slow. And so I suggest if you're in that boat, extensive reading has a lot in store for you.
I've met plenty of people that have a very high level of Chinese and they really love reading, you know, like our level 2 graded readers because they're just so easy and it's just so refreshing and they can read it so much faster.
Definitely. And it's just something you put in every day. It's just like working out. It sticks. I felt like all of a sudden I was like cheating on a test. It was like I'm just reading books and all of a sudden my Chinese was just getting so much better. So extensive reading, it works. And this is not something that's just for Chinese. There is so much research out there. There's a whole organization called the Extensive Reading Foundation. If anyone's interested, they call it erfoundation.org. And it's all these academics who spent their lives researching this. There's hundreds of research papers and just so many success stories. Like in Japan, like 50% of universities have extensive reading programs. But there's this one prep school in Japan where ER is like a core set of their English language learning for all the kids. And their bottom students, like the bottom quartile of their students in English, score in the top 2% of the national standardized English test. It's super effective.
Wow.
And all sorts of teachers that, you know, when they get into extensive reading, they're like, this is now all I do. This is my life mission. These guys turn like evangelists, just be like, extensive reading's the way to go. And it is super helpful. So get out there and do it.
Yeah, it will totally change the way that you approach Chinese, for sure.
Now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is...
Mandarin Companion! Yay!
All right. Today, John, we are plugging our very new book. It is our new breakthrough level reader called Just Friends.
Yeah, I think you mean Just Friends. And the Chinese name is 我们是朋友吗?
It's our love triangle. It's two guys that fall for the same girl and they agree, say, to preserve our friendship, we're not going to go after this girl.
But those kinds of gentlemen's agreements don't always go according to plan, do they?
No, all's fair in love and war.
And we actually got an email not too long ago from one of our readers who's like, how about some more strong female leads? And I think this book has a pretty strong female character. She's not just a trophy for the two main characters. You'll see if you read it.
So go out there and get it today on Amazon, on Kindle, on Kobo, or wherever you get your ebooks. Breakthrough level, 150 characters, just friends?
And please let us know what you think.
All right, now it's time for rants and raves. John, what do you got for us today? You got a rant or a rave?
I have a rave. Because today was all about extensive reading, there's also a website called The Chairman's Bow, and it is also leveled readings. They use HSK levels, which are a bit different from what we do, but it's focused on the news. So even though it's not the same as our system, and because it's the news, it means it's going to have less super high frequency vocabulary. It's still a cool site with a ton of pretty low level readings. And if you like the news, well, this is the site for you. The Chairman's Bow. So no hyphens or dashes or anything like that. One word. Pretty cool site.
Yeah, Chairman's Bow. I've met those guys before. I was at a conference in London. Good guys.
Okay, Jared. So rant or rave for you?
Well, you know what, John? I've actually got a rave. This is such a positive podcast. I mean, come on, you know. Hey, oh, well, actually, so this came up from one of the previous podcasts. Well, I got an email from one of our listeners, Simon Richards. Shout out to Simon, you demand. So he sent me an email and he's like, hey, you know, I have an iPhone, an Apple Watch. He's in the UK and you can change the language used by Siri to Mandarin Chinese. And I don't know why. I just never thought about that before, but you can do that. And he says, like, it gives him a lot more exposure to the language and practice speaking it. So before he leaves home in the morning, he asks his watch, like, 今天下雨吗? And it'll reply in Chinese. I remember Reuven Lerner in one of our previous interviews, he said that he had a navigation tool in his car and it's in Chinese. And once he had a Chinese friend in his car and it's like, speak Chinese, like, whoa! I was pretty excited about that.
And the added benefit is when you finally go to China, you can talk to the robots all in Chinese.
That's right. But they're never going to tell you, oh, need a zhongwen hanha.
They're all business. Kind of refreshing, actually.
My full name is Mariano Milliet, and I started learning Mandarin Chinese over 8 years ago.
Mariano is from Buenos Aires, Argentina. His native language is Spanish, but you'll notice his English is very good. That's because he attended an international school when he was a kid.
It all started back 12 years ago when I was working in a Chinese multinational company.
The essence of Mariano's story is how love changes our life.
I was working at the finance department, and I met this lovely Chinese expat from Beijing, who I had a huge crush on her. Slowly, I had the courage to ask this girl out.
His decision to simply ask a girl out on a date led him to learn Chinese, move halfway across the world, change careers, and raise a trilingual family. Stay with us. So you asked her out on a date. I assume she said yes.
Yeah. She accepted and we started dating. And for the first 2 years, actually, it was kind of top secret, confidential. Nobody knew about that in the company because we thought that some colleagues might think it could be inappropriate. And actually, our suspicion was correct because a lot of Chinese colleagues thought that it was not appropriate. Because she was hanging out with me all the weekends and, you know, after work, not with her Chinese colleagues.
I'd like to know a little bit because there's a bit of a stigma against some Chinese girls who are dating, you know, non-Chinese guys. Mm-hmm. Was that a little bit of a stigma there within the company?
Yes. Of course, back then I didn't know because I was not familiar with the culture, right? But then I started realizing the fact that sometimes, especially Chinese men and the leaders of the company, sometimes they are a bit reluctant to have some of their staff dating foreigners because they think that they might tell them some of the secrets of the company or share some classified information. But of course, this was not the case. You know, we were just dating. It was kind of naive at the very beginning. For the first 2 years we were dating, none of the colleagues knew about it. And then when we opened up, we realized that some of the leaders didn't like that.
Well, at what stage did you decide, hey, I'm going to start learning Chinese? Is this going to help me to
actually,
I guess,
once we, because of some personal issues, she decided that it was time to go back to Beijing, to China. And I always wanted to have an experience of living in overseas. You know, before moving to Beijing, it could be very helpful if at least I could speak some Chinese.
So something I'd like to hear from your perspective is like, for example, like a lot of our listeners for this podcast, their native language is English. Mm-hmm. Now, you obviously speak very good English, but you now are picking up a third language, which is Chinese. From your experience of learning Chinese as a native Spanish speaker, I mean, how did you get started? I imagine there's probably not as many materials as compared to like English speakers.
Actually, by the time I started learning Mandarin here in Buenos Aires, because I took a very short course, like 3 months, most of the material was from Spain, actually. So it was Spanish Mandarin, but it was a super basic level, you know, like Hanyu Pinyin, basically no characters. So at that moment, there was a lot of material in Spanish. So most of the things that I was trying to study were from the internet, and of course, they were in English. Yeah.
Got you. So there wasn't as much, I guess, Chinese-Spanish material. Most of it was English-Chinese.
Exactly. Nowadays, I still have to use the dictionary. I would prefer to use English-Chinese. I think it's more accurate sometimes, the definitions. Yeah.
I think it's interesting because us native English speakers, maybe we don't realize how good we have it, right?
It's so easy for you guys. Yeah.
So you went to Beijing. I mean, that was a big move. I mean,
yeah,
did you get a job before you left?
Yeah. Before, actually, I took my whole vacation time in Beijing, like over a month, just to look for a job. I was super lucky. I got a very good job there. You know, I was in the right place at the right time. And There was a finance and tax advisory firm that was looking for a foreigner with experience. So then at that moment, my girlfriend also got a good job. So we decided to move to Beijing. And when we got to Beijing, of course, all of a sudden I realized that my Chinese was non-existent.
It's like boo-haw.
Exactly, yeah. I couldn't understand anything, and everything that was coming out of my mouth was totally useless. All my tones were wrong, and I was only able to write pinyin, which, as we know there, it's useless.
Yeah, so it's really interesting how there's an older generation that can't even read pinyin. They learned Chinese back when it was just, you know, stroke order, and the pinyin wasn't something that was normally taught.
Yeah, I remember the first business meeting that I have in Beijing. It was very close to Wangfujing. And my office was located Guanghua Lu, Nevian, the Kerry Center. So Kerry Center, you know, there in CBD, in Guomao, is kind of a popular place for foreign companies in Beijing. So I took the taxi there, and I didn't know anything about China or even Chinese at that moment. So, you know, I just told him the place in English. I was able to handwrite the Hanyu Pinyin. Of course, the guy didn't read anything, didn't understand anything. I had the address written in English. So, of course, you know, it took me like 2 hours to get there. I got there late.
Oh, no.
Back then, it was a terrible experience, but now it's a funny story.
Other thing, side note, I always found interesting is that taxi drivers, they also, for some reason, like, can't read maps. I don't know if you've experienced that.
And even if you show them, if you tell them where to go in fluent Chinese or whatever, they want to see it. It seems like they don't trust you enough. I don't know why.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. Even like with like maps, I have a maps open on my phone. It's all in Chinese, you know, like Baidu Maps or something. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and they're like trying to turn the phone in different directions.
Exactly, like, until they find the right place. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Well, you got there to China. I mean, you're like, oh, my Chinese, it's just terrible. I can't even communicate. This is obviously, the common story, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all of a sudden, I realized that I was not able to communicate with anyone. And of course, this includes my colleagues, includes my parents-in-law. At that moment, I was not married to them, but, you know, I was trying to cause a good impression. So everything was with us. Hand signals at the beginning with them.
Well, here's something I've seen. I've seen at this stage that you have kind of two choices. You know, you can say, all right, well, I'm going to buckle down and I'm really going to focus on learning this language, or, you know what, this is just too hard. I'm dealing with living in a new country. Yeah. My job, everyone speaks English. Yeah. I've got my girlfriend. She speaks good Spanish and English, you know, I could get by.
Well, I think it all depends. I met a lot of foreigners, expats during my years in China. And there are two types of them. The ones that are very comfortable living in their expat bubble, and the ones that they decide, okay, I want to have the full China experience and, you know, get out of my comfort zone and make a big effort in order to learn Chinese, which is, of course, super difficult, especially at the beginning, because everything seems to be not normal for Westerners like us. It was challenging, definitely, at the beginning, because I was, you know, working during the day and I was taking one-on-one Mandarin lessons at night. So I would work from, you know, 8:30 or until 6 in the afternoon, and then from 7 to 9, I would take one-on-one lessons, like practically every day, including the weekends. So it was exhausting at the beginning, But, you know, the effort really paid off.
Can you tell me about any experiences along that time where, you know, where you felt like maybe giving up?
The biggest disappointment probably was at the beginning, you know, whenever I was going to those classes, maybe sometimes, you know, you communicate with other students, Chinese students, and they speak fluent and you speak almost non-existent. And so you start to compare yourself to other foreigners, which are, you know, fluent in the language, and you are having a nightmare because you're not progressing fast enough. But, you know, it takes time. At the beginning, I remember listening to other foreigners that were at that school there in Beijing, and they were very advanced. So for me, it was like supernatural. It was disappointing from one side, but at the same time, it was very encouraging to say, okay, I want to be like this guy.
You know, I remember talking to a friend back in Shanghai, and he kind of classified his experience in learning Chinese into four stages. As one is like, whoa, you can speak Chinese, you know, seeing some other guy, and he's like, that's amazing. And then to, you know, the second stage, you move on to like, wow, you know, I don't know if I can really ever speak this language. It's really hard.
Yeah.
To stage three of like, I can speak Chinese now. And you're like trying to talk to everyone. And then the fourth stage is just kind of like, eh, it's just Chinese.
Exactly. Yeah. But this is something that at the beginning, maybe you're very anxious of fast progress, but you realize that it's not going to happen.
So what were some of the things you were doing that you found that was effective to help you really start learning Chinese?
I think one of the most effective techniques is actually get out of the comfort zone from the very beginning. A lot of Chinese people were, you know, making fun of me at the beginning because I was getting all the tones wrong or I couldn't understand anything of what they were saying. I remember being super pissed off whenever I hear someone say, ah, 他听不懂.
Oh.
So that really motivated me to study even harder. Exactly. Or whenever, you know, you miss the tones, that's really frustrating. Even at that time when I was starting to say a few words and my girlfriend was correcting me, I was like, okay, but, you know, you can understand me. I'm doing my very best. How could it be possible that you're not understanding what I'm trying to say? And she said, no, I'm not. I'm not going to lie to you, you know. If you want to progress in this language, then you need to leave your ego aside, right? And to embrace when someone is correcting you.
Well, how did learning Chinese like help you progress in your relationship with your girlfriend?
I think it's a proof of respect towards the Chinese people, not only my girlfriend at that time or her family, but also it's a way to demonstrate that, okay, guys, I'm here to not only spend a few years or making money, but I'm also here to learn your culture. If you want to learn the Chinese culture, definitely you need to learn the language first. That will enable you to have a full comprehension of how things are done in China.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you moved to Beijing. You're spending a lot of time every night with tutors, focusing on the language. Like, what kind of progress were you making?
Well, at the beginning, it was very tough because I was getting confused all the time. I was using different books according to the teacher, that was the best way to learn Chinese. And then during the weekends, you know, I was going to my in-laws' house and trying to reproduce some of the words that I was learning during the week, right? So that was a good way to see, because when you speak to Chinese people that are not, you know, they do not speak other languages, this is the best way to learn. If you speak to someone who is fluent in foreign languages, then they will have a different concept. Like, if they don't understand, they will tell you directly. So I was very strict with myself from the beginning. And I was asking my girlfriend and her relatives and friends to be very strict on me as well.
Now, how did you start picking up characters?
I think with having more confidence in myself and having more exposure. At the beginning, when I was trying to read, it was almost impossible because you recognize very few characters. And then slowly you start to understand how this works. And extensive reading definitely helps a lot.
Did you get into that?
At the beginning, no. But after 1 year or 1 year and a half, then I started to use graded readers. Very helpful. Extensive reading helps a lot. I would strongly recommend everyone who is learning Chinese seriously to do that.
Tell me about some of the breakthrough moments you had along the way.
I think it, you know, I had different stages on that, on breakthroughs. Probably the first one will be, you know, to try to communicate with someone, very basic things. When you go to a shop to buy something and all of a sudden you don't need to repeat the sentence, you know, they understood it from scratch. So and you understand what they replaying to you. So I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe it. I'm from Argentina and I'm here now in Beijing and I'm speaking Chinese and they are understanding me and I'm understanding what they're saying to me. So I would say
that's such a great feeling.
Exactly. That's something that I would never dream of before. And then once you start to improve your level, slowly you start using the language with your colleagues and you start learning professional language like business Chinese. But probably the biggest breakthrough was making a whole presentation to investors in Chinese.
Oh, you do that. That's amazing.
Probably the most difficult thing is that sometimes when you open the Q&A thing, you receive questions directly in Chinese, and you know, investors, they're not going to help you with the grammar or the tones or whatever, right? They will speak in their native language and they will ask you professional deep questions. But definitely the most difficult thing in Chinese, or at least in my experience, even if you're having a conversation, especially when there are a lot of people involved in the conversation, let's say on a table with different friends or relatives, when you don't control the topic of the conversation, it's probably the most difficult thing. If you don't have a good vocabulary, right? Maybe you can understand one or two words, so you can deduce what they're talking about, but you cannot control it.
You know, this is a good point. I've talked to people about having comprehensible input. And this is essentially what we're talking about here, is that sometimes you lose control of that conversation. They're asking the questions and now you can't control what's being asked and therefore, you know, what kind of needs to be replied.
Exactly.
And if you are only at like, you know, 90% comprehension, you know, a lot of people think, oh, 90%, that's good enough. And no, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's not good enough. It's like 1 in 10 words, you know, and that's the key word that they're asking about, right?
Yeah, that happens a lot. You know,
and those are big deals. And like, and if you don't know that, you know, they're asking about like the interest rate, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't know the word for interest rate or what's the, you know, marginal rate of return or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you don't have that in your vocabulary, you cannot give an accurate answer.
Well, that happens a lot.
Well, I also like to hear a little bit about your experience and like your relationship with your in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
I don't assume that they speak any English or much less Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. So how are you able to connect with your in-laws in that respect?
Yeah, absolutely. At the beginning, you know, it was everything with hand signals and communicating through my girlfriend at that moment. Now she's my wife. And, you know, it was definitely very tough at the beginning. I remember a few months after I arrived to Beijing, my father-in-law, he passed away. So my girlfriend's father passed away. So it was a kind of a tragic moment, definitely, and totally unexpected. And I was there, you know, to share that very complicated moment. And I was studying Mandarin at the same time. So for my mother-in-law, it was definitely a proof that, okay, this guy is serious about my daughter. Right? This guy is here to stand up in a very difficult moment, learning the language, because he's respecting our culture and respecting us. So I think that really helped me to have a good relationship from the very beginning, even though I was not able to speak to them in Chinese during, I would say, the first year or so. Yeah.
Wow, that's got to be a really challenging situation.
Yeah, it was definitely a very challenging, because, you know, a lot of people from her family was, you know, expecting me to say words in a very complicated moment. I was not able to reproduce anything. So it was complicated. You know, if you know the culture, you can understand. Of course, in every culture is a very difficult moment, but in China, especially, I was the only foreigner in the family. So they were expecting me to act in a certain way. And then my girlfriend was telling me what to do or even what to say. This was only 3 months after I got to Beijing. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's quite an experience.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So your mother-in-law, your relationship with her, that sounds like you guys went through a lot of experiences. But did she ever like help you learn Chinese? I mean, how did that relationship work there?
Yeah, she helped me a lot because she realized that I was making a huge effort in order to learn the language. And once I started to get an intermediate level or so, I was able to communicate with her on a daily basis and talk about different topics. I think the best way in order to help her or, you know, contribute something to her was to teach her Hanyu Pinyin, because at that moment she didn't know. So I was able to teach her Pinyin. So nowadays she's able to type that and use WeChat and other applications and everything because of that.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I bet she did wonders for your relationship too.
Yeah, she was, she really thanked me for that. And I think it was the least I could do.
So where are you now? You were in Beijing for quite some time, but I know you moved back to Argentina where you are now. What happened there and how has Chinese now influenced your career?
Well, I would say a lot. It definitely gave me a big plus in terms of career development. Argentina, as many other Latin American countries, have a lot of business ties with China. And this opened up a big door for me. So I was able to return to Argentina almost 4 years ago and use Mandarin as a tool to help me to find a good job.
So do we have a lot of Chinese people investing or doing business in Argentina?
They are. They are a lot of SOEs and also private entities that are doing business here in Argentina. Maybe that relationship among the two countries is not so developed as it is with, developed countries. But I think the opportunities are very big.
So are there any deals or projects you were able to get because of your language skills?
You know, I was able to present and to introduce a lot of investment opportunities to Chinese investors in forums and in one-to-one meetings. And some of them we were able to pitch them. Yeah. Of course, not only because of me or my Mandarin skills, but I could say that I contributed a little bit.
Well, tell us now, like looking back, you've had a long road to achieving a good, comfortable level of proficiency in Chinese. Mm-hmm. But going back, if you could do it over again, what would you do differently?
I would stress out more the importance of tones, definitely. My first Mandarin teacher didn't pay so much attention on the tones. And then after 1 year or so, I was still making a lot of mistakes on that. And as we all know, tones are essential in the process of learning Chinese. And also, especially for beginners, I would pay a lot of focus on the speed in which you talk, in which you speak. Because some people, they have the tendency to speak very fast. And if you're not being fluent on that, then you can miss a lot of tones and then Chinese people will not understand what you're trying to say. So it's better to say it slowly and make sure that the tones are okay.
Now, something I mentioned earlier is that, you know, us people who have English as a native language, to a degree, we're a bit of spoiled because of all the resources that are available. Mm-hmm. But what advice would you give to someone whose native language is Spanish or German even, mm-hmm. and or French, and they're trying to learn Chinese right now?
I would say that they should try to definitely get in contact with Chinese people in their community, in their home countries. That helps a lot. You know, Chinese people are very encouraging when they see foreigners learning their language. And in terms of resources, I think nowadays it's way much better in every single language, especially the European languages, compared to, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago. Even Pleco dictionaries, now they have versions in all those languages.
Oh, do they? Fantastic. Yeah. Go Pleco. Mariano, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me in the podcast. Actually, I might have a job opportunity in China in the future as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, something I always say, for some people, you can leave China, but China never leaves you.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, pirate, lost boy, gardener, postman, and that one guy named Dominic. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mandarincompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is James Harper. I'd like to thank our guest, Mariano Millet, and as always, my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Passon. See you next time.